Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. The sign outside should tell you, and yeah, I'll tell you, I've got my Taharka ice cream here in the shots now because I'm wasting away these pints one by one, the wake and bake, the honey graham. I'm about to run out of honey graham again. We appreciate our sponsors at Baltimore Positive, and I tell you, there's going to come a point, maybe when these 90-degree days are done and we can get through this COVID, we'll get together again out at State Fair, broadcast out there. I wish we were doing this one there. I know Don Moeller wishes that as well. El Guapo will be open across the street with some delicious Mexican food as well. We're going to have Evan Brown on the show this week to talk more about that. Don't forget our friends at Fadley's at Lexington Market, also coming to Catonsville and also shipping crab cakes to you from around the world. You can find them at Fadley's. And a really interesting episode of Baltimore Positive I did last month right around the 4th of July about where your crab cakes come from. And we talk about buy local, think local, the Chesapeake Bay, all that we've done. Think local when you get your crab cakes as well. Fadley's certainly does as well. Talking about local, the local real estate market, soaring. Houses not staying out there. Jeff Moeller was on with me last week. You can find that out at WNST.net, talking about all the things that Moeller and Gary Realty do in closing deals. Don, I'm going to let you take the floor because I'm holding up a pin here, and you know I've had this pin for a long time now, the Keep Preakness in Baltimore pin that I wore out last year when Brandon Scott, the incoming mayor, and I got together. This is a segment after anyone that loves the Preakness and loves Pimlico, right?
Well, nobody's been more involved from the ground floor from day one in saving the Preakness than the well-known delegate from the 41st, Delegate Sandy Rosenberg. Sandy, you've been down there almost 30 years now. Does that even compute?
No, 38.
38. I'm sorry, my math is right. 38 years.
83, right?
83.
No.
Mr. Jeff.
I still love it. Still think I can get things done, and using this unfortunate time period that we're in now with the pandemic to follow the advice of Rahm Emanuel when he was President Obama's chief of staff, who said a crisis should not go to waste. We have opportunities to deal with issues in terms of inequities, in terms of public education, that people knew about, but they're now at the forefront. And so it's our responsibility, not just me as a single legislator, but it's the public's responsibility, my colleagues, the people who make decisions about how we fund programs, to address those inequities. And look forward to talking to you about that.
I want to ask about the Preakness and about Pimlico. And,
sure.
And listen, we cannot have this conversation as though there's no COVID, there's no pandemic, because it certainly plays into it. But in its own silo, what Pimlico, the Preakness, the track, the Maryland Jockey Club, their own internal battles, the Stronics, the slots, all that you've witnessed, literally, right? You know, through all of these years. You've been there through all of this and seen to some degree a deterioration of the Preakness and the infield and the changing of the guard and what it's going to be. And then there's this vision of what it might be in the future for people like us that, you know, I've probably been to 25 Preaknesses, 30 Preaknesses in my life, my 52 years. Trying to sell that as something that's a positive thing for Baltimore. You've been on the front of that. Give me a little soup to nuts. Take all the oxygen you want and need on what that's about. So, you know, my audience on the sports side would have a greater understanding. But my wife, who lives in the city, who only knows the Preakness is a place that was kind of bawdy and rowdy, and we only go once a year, and how we'd love for that to be different because we went to Saratoga last summer. You know what I mean?
Sure. Saratoga, I've been there once. As an aside, Saratoga to me was Fenway Park for horses.
1,000,000%.
Okay. Here's how, and thank you, Don, for what you said about my role and as well, Nestor. Here's how we started. I went to the Stadium Authority. I didn't go to the Stadium Authority. First, I said, Stadium Authority, well-regarded by everybody in Annapolis, the two stadiums downtown, the Hippodrome, school reconstruction in the city, the new basketball facility, the Comcast Center at College Park. Let's have them do a study of, first question, can Pimlico still be the site? Can a modernized Pimlico still be the site for the Preakness? And we got together. There was one and only meeting of the third Saturday in May committee. Of course, that's when the Preakness runs. But when we had commitments from the Jockey Club, from the city, and from the state to fund the study by the Stadium Authority, we met and we made the proposal to the Stadium Authority. And I will say I've had conversations before that meeting with Tom Kelso, the new chair at the Stadium Authority. And to show you how this town works, in part, how did myself, a good Democrat from Baltimore City, get a meeting with Tom Kelso, the new Republican chair of the Stadium Authority? I was at the Diz, late lamented Diz restaurant in Remington, saw Don Hutchinson. Don Hutchinson knows his politics and his sports. I told Don what I was trying to do. He arranged the lunch that I had with Tom Kelso.
It doesn't get much more Baltimore.
Was a burger involved in that? Was there a burger at the Diz?
Was there what?
Was there a burger at the Diz? Usually it's a burger there, right?
No, I was, and the waitress knew what I got. I was either the chicken salad club or the tuna salad club. But to show you also, pretty much every May after the session, after that first session when we had the report was in the works, I would get together with Don at the Diz so to catch him up and to get his advice on next steps. Okay. So the report comes out, and it says a remodeled Pimlico can remain the site for the Preakness. And at our darkest moments, and there were some dark moments along the way, okay, I always said to people, the Stadium Authority said this can work, number one. And number two, the law said the race must be run at Pimlico. And that law came about in 1987 when Frank DeFrancis had just bought the track, wanted to have Sunday racing at Pimlico. Just as there was no early baseball or football at Memorial Stadium, Nestor, are you old enough to know when did baseball games start and Colts game used to start?
I am very well aware of the Sunday blue laws and the 2 p.m. kickoffs and all.
Correct.
Yes, I know all about that.
Correct. So just as the ministers and the community had gotten that law passed, city ordinance for Memorial Stadium, the good neighbors all on all sides of Pimlico had a similar, well, not similar, even more so, no Sunday racing at Pimlico. DeFrancis wanted Sunday racing. There was a new governor in town, a new sheriff in town, Don Schaefer, and he said, how about this as a compromise? You get Sunday racing, but we also get language added to the law in the same bill that gives you Sunday racing that says the Preakness must be run in Baltimore. Now, I was not in the room where it happens for that deal. I was in my second term, my fifth year, okay? So I can't take credit for it, but boy, did I rely on that in the last 5 years to say, I don't think the votes are there to lose the Preakness, and you would have needed to pass a bill for that to happen.
So getting from there to like 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now, whenever the pandemic's over, whenever we're going to have more Preaknesses in normal running, and we're trying to run the races here in the fall this year, and all this is going on, and it's all moving ground. None of us have a playbook for this. But what has happened and transpired, not just politically, but in regard to money and in regard to the creation of, and Don, I know you took a look at it. I took a look at it. Bill Cole's been on a couple of times. This beautiful glass sort of structure that looks like a modern place you want to hang out and get some sunshine and spend the day.
Well, it's also a place where, if the voters approve, you can go bet on football, on baseball, because if we have sports wagering, that is a likely place at Pimlico, the 2 1-mile tracks, in addition to the casinos, to have sports betting. And that will be a way, one of the ways, that you get people used to going to Pimlico once again. How did we ultimately get this done? I would think it was lots of people working for, it was the city delegation uniform and the Baltimore County delegation. Well, there it was partisan, I believe. But it wasn't just a Baltimore City. We saw it as a metropolitan issue. And then a year ago in April, there was a compromise bill. Well, I wouldn't quite call it compromise. That's being too nice. There was a bill that would have moved the race to Laurel, would have created the possibility to develop Pimlico, but developing it without the Preakness was ultimately a no-go. That bill was reported to the Senate floor Friday of the last weekend of Sign and Die, our last weekend in Annapolis, and there was a vote on what we reached an agreement with the Speaker's office was, let's have this bill considered by the city delegation in the House on Saturday afternoon and see what their view is.
You know, Don, when I hear these stories in retrospect, how close the Redskins came to playing in Laurel, how close we came to losing this or this not happening, or even back to Edward Bennett Williams, it really is incredible. And I know I turned to you for Baltimore Positive, how often government and how important it is, from the Colts to the Orioles to the Ravens, through all of this, that there have to be a lot of Sandys and a lot of people involved, a lot of Governor Schaefers, in order to sort of move mountains for these things to happen, right?
Well, it's Sandy knows this, again, with almost 40 years experience down there now in Annapolis. It's just not reasonable to think that you can move a state forward with any kind of vision without active participation from the legislature, from the governor, from your local county executives and mayor. Government has to be part of solving real problems, and we're going to talk with Delegate Sandy Rosenberg about a number of those problems that he's working on right now that have been exacerbated by COVID. But it does take government. And Sandy, how many times, I mean, let me say this half joke, how many times was this effort to save the Preakness on life support? I mean, it seemed to me over, 10 or 15 years, we were calling to the family to the hospital regularly to give the last rites.
Well, my view was I depended on the study done by the Stadium Authority, the credibility that had, and the law that said the Preakness must be run here, except for that last weekend last year when we had a consideration of the bill that would have meant the end of the Preakness in Baltimore by the City House delegation. My colleagues from my district, from the adjoining 40th District, all of us made our pitch. It's now time for the vote, and I'm old-fashioned, so I have by hand, a little sheet that I put in front of me, Y for yes on one side and for no on the other. I usually just do hash marks, because what matters is you got to count to, I think it's nine in the city delegation to have a majority. It's eight. There's 16 of us. I just usually just have hash marks. Not this time. I was taking names. I was taking prisoners. I started writing down each person's name as they voted yes, and then stopped after three or four because everybody was voting yes.
Okay. What did that feel like, Sandy, for you at that moment?
Well, I get chills right now talking about
right.
it again. Everything we had worked on, Bill Cole, my colleagues in the 40th District and the 41st District, the mayor's office, everybody who had worked on this, my good friend Anthony Manganiello, everybody who had worked on it, it all, at that point, came together. And then the mayor made the extraordinarily smart move of saying to Belinda Stronach, Preakness Week, or even Preakness Day, let's put a halt or let's temporarily withdraw the city's eminent domain lawsuit and see if we can reach an agreement. So we killed the bill in April. The mayor said, didn't kill the lawsuit. He said, let's put a hold on it for 90 days. Let's see if we can reach an agreement at the bargaining table. And that's where you had, I think it's fair to say, the miracle, not on 33rd Street, but the miracle on Belvedere and Park Heights, of coming up with a plan that not only keeps the Preakness at Pimlico, not only renovates Pimlico and Laurel as racing facilities, but also makes Pimlico an extraordinary redevelopment opportunity for Northwest Baltimore and the Baltimore metropolitan area.
Sandy Rosenberg is our guest, delegate Sandy Rosenberg. I'm out on his website right now, delsandy.com. Go ahead, Don.
I was going to say, I want to pick up right, and I want you to keep going. And that's just that we want you to take all of the oxygen you need, because there are a lot of our listeners, many of them from Baltimore, but many from around the state. And you're really painting a picture as to why this matters. So if for those listeners who aren't in Baltimore City or Baltimore County and aren't all that familiar with the area, walk them through why this is bigger than just rebuilding a racetrack and why it's bigger for a community. I mean, we had Michael Olesker on not long ago, right, who still lives a couple blocks from Pimlico. He said, look, I still live around the corner. You know, he's probably one of your constituents.
Yes. Right.
So tell us why it's bigger than just fixing up a racetrack.
Well, the racing industry is a significant industry in the state of Maryland. So you have horses that are bred in rural areas of the state, keeping farms green and not developed. So it serves that benefit as well. It is a significant number of people employed in the industry, both on the farms and at the two racetracks. It is the Preakness weekend itself is a benefit for the metropolitan area in terms of hotels, dining, all of that, you know, discretionary spending that we always felt that if the Preakness were to be moved to Laurel, or as Charlie Ekman would say, lovely Laurel.
Laurel.
Lovely
Give it
Laurel.
To us, Nestor.
You know what? I found an old Ekman audio tape on reel-to-reel, Sandy, and we have it digitized. We lost the coach on July 3rd was the day he died, July 4th week. And I resurrected it, and I put it out on the internet, and people had a good time with it. So,
good.
You know, when you hear the coach come back to life,
okay,
you know what I'm saying? It's nice.
Well, in some measure, he does come back to life because his daughter works for in Annapolis in the General Assembly. And it was just a really special moment for her and for me, when I would update her on what we were doing.
Hey, stop the music. Call a cab.
Call a cab.
That's it, yeah.
She translated call a cab for me once, which I can't repeat at this time. But that's okay.
Call a cab basically meant you're drunk, get out, and I'm throwing you out of the bar and sending
Correct.
You home because you don't make any sense.
Correct.
And I've called a lot of people cabs on the radio over 30 years, Sandy.
Correct. I understand. So it is a benefit, Preakness Week as well. But my point I was making, if the Preakness was at Laurel, that discretionary spending, to a very significant degree, would have been in Washington, D.C., not in the state of Maryland. So there's another benefit to keeping the Preakness at Baltimore. And one final thing, my good friend, my late friend, unfortunately, Bob Manfuso, took me to the yearling sale, the Fasig Tipton yearling sale at Timonium every Preakness post-week, the week after the Preakness. So this is a significant Maryland industry of extraordinary benefit to the city of Baltimore, Preakness Week, and slightly over half of the property will be developed, the Pimlico property, will be redeveloped for non-racing uses. Residential, commercial, medical. Sinai is already committed. Sinai owns, Lightbridge Sinai Hospital, owns the parking lot on the eastern end of the property closest to the JFX. And they're going to be building there. So this is an extraordinary jewel that is being redeveloped for, as I said, the city and the region.
If you just tuned into Baltimore Positive, no one more Baltimore Positive than longtime Delegate Sandy Rosenberg talking about keeping the Preakness in Baltimore. Don, I want to move from the racetrack into the classroom because we've talked about Kerwin going on a year and a half and 250 episodes. There have been very few where it hasn't been brought up from people in politics, out of politics, because it affects everybody, every child. And I think as we watch this baseball and sports thing happen in the coming weeks and the school thing happen in other places. And I know pre-K is one of your big issues, Sandy, and,
right.
And obviously Kerwin's been something we're on here. I think this country's really, along with politics and who's going to be the president, is going to be looking at education more so than we've ever looked at it before because of what's happened, this displacement of our children and the safety of our children. It was about guns and it was about killers in classrooms this time last year. Now it's about who's going to educate my child, and how can we do that safely? And I'll let you take over here because I would think your daughter's up late at night worried about this kind of thing, right?
Well, it's just me, but I worry about it during the daytime. But it is, and I've discussed this with Britt Kerwin. All this discussion we're having now about inequality, that is the heart of the Kerwin recommendations. Recognizing that there are imbalances, inequities in the resources that we bring to school because there are imbalances and inequities in the capacity, in the childhood education, in the nurturing at the home that so many of our children get or don't have. And so therefore, we're learning now, the general public has become more aware of the fact that schools don't only teach, they provide meals. They provide counseling, a whole host of things. And Kerwin doesn't address the meals, but addresses the counseling part as well. We're now more aware the digital divide, the fact that, we have, we are going to have learning outside the school, digital classrooms, there are a significant number of families in Baltimore City and throughout the state that don't have access to the Internet, don't have the hardware to access the Internet, or the child doesn't get the supervision, doesn't get the help in access using the equipment that is in the house, and therefore doesn't participate in that virtual learning. And so that's one of the things I'm working on with some colleagues in Annapolis and with advocates it's two things. It's money, it's hardware, broadband access, And then the laptop in the home, but it's also assisting the parents who are overwhelmed, have so many other responsibilities that they have to deal with in their household, who aren't able to assist their child or children, plural, in taking advantage of the hardware that they may have so they can have that digital learning experience.
Well, Sandy, there is no topic, and Nestor alluded again to my daughter, who's an elementary school principal in Baltimore County. But I don't think there is any topic that is going to be more important in the next 18 months to 2 years than this whole issue that you're drilling down on in terms of inequities. We've had several terrific conversations with Dr. Sonia Santelisa, mm-hmm. who's just wonderful in Baltimore City. We've had them with the superintendent in Baltimore County. I react to it this way, and I'm thinking of, you just alluded to it, the amount of time that it takes for parents to oversee what is happening, even if the digital devices are available. And what I mean by that is, I've tried to view it up close and personal since May, when this thing really shut down in the area. And, you know, I've been working with my 9 and 10-year-old grandchildren. Mm-hmm. We've been working on books. We've been having a book club. We've been working on vocabulary. Now we're doing multiplication tables. That's time-consuming. And their moms and dads are at work. I don't know how they would fit that in. Mm-hmm. My wife is now working with our grandson, who's going to be an eighth grader. And they're reading books, getting ready for him, and working on his vocabulary. Now, that only exacerbates that divide, because even if we have the devices, and I need you to talk about this a little bit, it's not as simple. I mean, it starts with making sure the Wi-Fi hotspots are available.
Right.
It starts with making sure that the children have Chromebooks or another device. But I still have to have the human capital.
Correct.
The moms and dads or grandmas, somebody there to make sure that the children are in front of the screen paying attention and not walking around the room.
Absolutely. No, that's, and Dr. Sandalise has met with, by Zoom, with the City House and Senate delegations. That's one of the issues that we discussed, was once the hard, what do you do after the hardware's there?
Right.
She's aware of that. There are things going on, and part of my ask is, how can we help you get more resources to make that happen, to have more of that connection?
Speaking of the resources, Nestor and I have been on this Pullman bandwagon and the Built Alone bandwagon since the beginning. The $4 billion for Kerwin, the 2.2 for Built to Learn and school construction.
Right.
Citing the pandemic, the end of the session, and you know, it was a rush. Everything was coming down. We're trying to wrap everything up. You got it all passed somehow. Heroic efforts, I think, by both chambers, and hats off to Senate President Bill Ferguson and Speaker Adrian Jones.
Absolutely.
You got it done, and then lo and behold, the governor and Nestor has said over and over, he just doesn't understand the play here. The governor steps up and vetoes the two most important educational legislative initiatives that the state's had probably in decades. Sandy, tell us how we pick ourselves up and get back in the race, as Frank Sinatra would say. How do we save these things?
Well, we override the vetoes. And that is the first, well, that must be taken up at the next session. I say that because if, and there are no current plans to do that, and not likely to be plans to do that, because there are also health considerations. But if we were to meet in special session, you would have to take the vetoes up at that special session, which can last for 30 days. Not continuously, but you have a 30-day period in which to take action. Otherwise, if we don't have a special session, it can be, the vetoes can be taken up at any time during the 90-day session in January. So that is the constitutional time frame in which we'd operate to deal with those vetoes. And I would every reason
ahead,
to believe that we would override not just those two, but for sure the governor's vetoes of the Kerwin bill and the school construction bill.
And then do you fold in the HBCU support into that as well?
Or is that a separate issue? That is very high, as justifiably so, on the list of bills that we would override. I think there are close to two dozen bills.
Because the HBCU is about $600 million in addition. So
correct.
Now we ask you the tough questions. We all agree this is a great idea, but I can hear the small C fiscal conservatives
right.
out there in their cars saying, look, guys, nobody disagrees that it's a great idea. How in the world do we pay for this? So Nestor and I, with all due humility, turn to you. You've been down there almost 40 years.
Yes, sir.
How do we pay for this?
We will find a way. One of the things I learned sitting next to Bobby Neal, every day I was in Annapolis, my first term, first 4 years, we were seatmates on the Appropriations Committee, is no fiscal leader in Annapolis, D or R, Senate or House, will take action that jeopardizes our AAA bond rating. And no governor would do that. So we will, with the advice of our professional budget staff, come up with a way to fund those essential programs that we've talked about in a manner that preserves our AAA bond rating. I am certain of that. I don't know the specifics because I don't think there are specifics yet, but I am certain of that.
Sandy Rosenberg is here, House of Delegates, been there a long, long time talking about all sorts of local issues, including the Preakness, including education. And, you know, I want to give you a little bit of oxygen here to talk about neighborhoods and lead poisoning and and what you're doing in the 41st. And it's no secret. I mean, I put together a whole bunch of information about the city, and we had all of these mayor candidates on. And to me, it's always been about neighborhoods and strengthening neighborhood by neighborhood, whether it's policing, whether it's education, but all of that comes back to funding and equity and equitable and all the things that I've been talking about on Kerwin and what certain neighborhoods get and certain neighborhoods don't get. And you've been fighting for your people for a long, long time.
Oh, sure. Look, neighborhood work is an essential part of the job, whether you are a state legislator, city council, or the Congress. I mean, to greater degrees at the city council level and the state level than at the Congress. But we're working with neighborhoods about a rec center and getting that upgraded. We're working with, look, a year ago, more than a year ago, we started meeting with the neighbors to the north and to the south bordering Pimlico Racetrack so that there would be legitimate input for them in the decisions that are made after the bill is passed. In Howard Park, I'm sure some of your listeners spent some time as kids at the Ambassador Theater. Well, there's an effort to renovate that theater and make it into a performing arts center. And that would complement what's already going on in that neighborhood, the new ShopRite, the new public school that just opened in time to be shut down 2 months later, in all in that one corner. And but it shows you something about the job of a legislator, I think it was 3 years ago, on one of the other corners at Liberty Heights and Gwin Oak. There's a liquor store. There are a lot of, as Gene Parker at City College would say, knuckleheads who hang out on the corner, drugs, shootings, three murders related to that corner in one weekend. And so my colleagues and I from the 41st District, we passed a bill reducing the hours that that liquor store could be open. So those are the kinds of things you that you do as a legislator to be an advocate for your neighborhoods as best you can.
Sandy, why? What is it about the job? And as Lester knows, I do have great affection for folks like you.
Thank you.
Who have dedicated their lives to public service. Not to get rich, not to line your pockets, just a belief that you can do something to make where we live be a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that after almost 40 years still gives you a little giddy up in your step and
right.
makes you want to get up and go back to Annapolis and do it all over again?
Great question, and I appreciate the question. Well, the highfalutin way would be the highfalutin answer, and that's not going to be my only answer, would be Justice Brandeis said that the states are the laboratories of democracy. And that was before the New Deal, where there were ideas that generated in, you know, New York, other liberal states that Roosevelt then made law in the 100 days and so on. And there's still that today because of gridlock in Congress. And that would, that states do things first, get things done first. And so that takes me to the better answer, the very simple answer, why I love the job. You can get things done. If you're a state legislature and you're in the majority, and to some degree in the minority you can, on non-ideological issues. But if you know how the system works, you can get things done. And that varies from, you know, today I wrote some people about the digital divide, some colleagues. But I could have done the next step in on my own. But I said, no, I want to bring other people in to the room, not yet the room where it happens, as in Hamilton, you know, but the room where you figure out how you're going to make it happen. Because the more, it's better to have more people involved, and then it increases your chances of getting it done. You don't, one of the things I teach my, remind myself and teach my students, because I co-teach the legislation class at Maryland Law School, your name does not have to be first. And Don, I'm sure you know this. Your name doesn't have to be first on the bill. As long as you can legitimately say to your constituents, I played a part in getting this done, that's what matters. And
that's,
I get
true,
a great
that's
fulfillment out of that.
That's what we need more of. Nestor, we're not going to have Delegate Sandy Rosenberg on here in the middle of the summer without talking about what we all know who know him is his number one passion. Tell Nestor, Delegate, if he were ever to show up in your office in Annapolis, what are your walls adorned with?
Well, there are lots of things, but it includes a copy of piece of literature put out against me for going to fantasy camp during session.
The delegate loves him some baseball, Nestor.
Well, I know this about you, and I was going to, you know, I was going to turn this to both of you, the adults in the room here, watching this COVID thing happen with the Marlins and where sports is, are, and shall be. I mean, the Ravens are coming back to work here. You know, I would say pump the brakes on this. I don't think this is a good idea for lots of reasons, health being primary. And the biggest thing for me is I don't think they can complete either of these seasons with integrity. And I mean integrity by keeping teams together where it's going to matter who wins and it's not going to be some sort of act of, you know, attrition over the next couple of months for all of these franchises in all of these sports. I just don't think this is a great idea. All that being said, I'm in the sports business, so that makes me a bad guy, right? Because I'm rooting against it. I'm not rooting against it. I just I don't think the juice is worth the squeeze, as I stand. And certainly not for the Orioles, who can't win anyway.
Well, my heart says, hey, look, I said to people, I ain't watching MSNBC this weekend. I'm just going to watch baseball.
And I did.
Okay.
I was with you. Right.
And you know that, I'm dating myself, but boy, will there be a huge asterisk, you know, far bigger than the one when Roger Maris, you know, had eight extra games to break Babe Ruth's record in 1960. But
it's a shallow exhibition season, sort of, kind of, and they're trying to get through
it. But for the Orioles, it was going to be an exhibition season anyway. You know,
I would push back. Sandy, I'm going to jump in. Yeah. I mean, this is where Nestor gets me going. It didn't feel at all like an exhibition season to me on Saturday.
Correct.
When Alex Cobb was dealing. And I thought to myself, so this is the Alex Cobb that we got. And like you, I watched all three games. Nestor, I hear you, and I want the delegate to weigh in. But there's something in terms of the American psyche. If they can play, and even if they can only play 60 games, that for one weekend, I felt, okay, this is fun again. I don't know. How about you, Delegate?
What were the ratings? Do you know yet, Nestor?
I know last week on the first night it was a big deal. The A-Rod gives a Thursday night did well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it was the most watched MLB game, non-playoff awards in history that first night. So, I mean, people are dying for it.
Unfortunately, the Yankees won, but yeah.
But I mean, what is it, Sandy? Tell us. I mean, we could go back and forth on whether they should play, whether or not, and it's, we're going to find out. I mean, again, the virus is going to decide. But talk to us and our listeners, and I know we're coming up short on time here. Where did your love affair begin with the Orioles? Because you truly do love them.
Well, let's say my father had season tickets, so I went. Didn't go to many night games during school. Didn't go on many school nights. But here's my best story as a kid. My grandparents spent time in St. Petersburg during the winter. That's where the Yankees trained at that time. They were not yet owned by Steinbrenner, so they weren't in Tampa Bay.
Huggins-Stengel Field, right?
Okay, that I didn't know. But they befriended Jerry Coleman, who was a second baseman then for the Yankees before Bobby Richardson. Hey, and I learned yesterday that Congressman Clyburn, he said, I grew up on the other side of town from Bobby Richardson. Bet you didn't know that.
Shot heard around the world.
There you go. So they befriended Richardson. They said, we have this precocious 8-year-old grandson who keeps score. Could you arrange for him to meet Casey Stengel in Baltimore? So, game at Memorial Stadium. I'm 8 years old. My father and I go down into the dugout. We are introduced to Casey. Casey says, young man, I understand you keep score. He must have had a good advance man, okay? He says, I understand you keep score. How do you score it? There's a ground ball to the shortstop, to the second baseman, to the first baseman, okay? I was not yet, as Nick Schloeder would say, a smart, Alec Jewish kid, okay? So I simply answered the question. I didn't say, oh, that's easy. I simply answered the question, and I said, oh, that's 6-4-3. And Casey said, you're better than our scorekeeper. Okay?
What year was this, late 50s?
Let's say I'm 8 years old, so I'm 58, yeah.
Beautiful.
1958, yeah.
It doesn't get much better than that, does it, Nestor?
Well, I mean, you know, sports is a lifetime passion, I think, for all of us. But then there's the part on Sunday where, like, the Marlins popped dirty test and all got together, and I guess they played pixie sticks and decided, well, let's play the game anyway. I mean, you know, in the aftermath of hearing this and seeing this and, you know, I keep going back to the reference, and I think about my wife and I back in January and February watching the nightly news and the guys in the hazmat suits running in and out of buildings in Wuhan and pulling bodies out and taking them off in this sort of Willy Wonka suits and thinking about how they've treated the virus versus, oh, we got 4 dirty tests in here, game starts in an hour, let's get the game in, you know what I mean? And then get on a bus and come down to Baltimore and infect this clubhouse. So, I'm all for they've got to get on the field, that helps our psyche, and I agree with all that. Then what happens, I mean, at what cost? You know, is it they've got to get on the field no matter what? And if no matter what is the bar we're going to hold the NFL and baseball to, the price is too high. There has to come a point where you say that has to be shut down because any doctor, any epidemiologist in the world would shut that down.
And I think that's what, Nestor, I think that's what we're going to find out. I don't think any of us disagree with that. I was frustrated. I got a sense that the Orioles were frustrated with the Marlins, because it sounds like the Orioles, from the Angelo Suns on down, have really taken this thing seriously and have approached it the right way. And Derek Jeter aside, maybe they didn't. So, as you've always said, Nestor, we're going to find out. The virus is going to decide we're not going to decide. Mm-hmm. But I think this has been a great visit with one of the really legendary delegates out of Annapolis, Sandy Rosenberg.
Thank you, Tom. And Nestor.
And next time we get together, we'll talk about minor league baseball, because I'm wound up. I get a baseball guy on here. I'm ready to go, Sandy. I really do appreciate you.
Put me in, Coach. I'm ready to play.
Next time we'll just talk nothing but sports. How about that? That'll
okay.
be fun. Appreciate you.
Pleasure.
You got it. Sandy Rosenberg, a member of the House of Delegates since 1983, doing all sorts of things, the chair of the Subcommittee on Government Operations and the House Chair of the Joint Committee on Administrative, Executive, and Legislative Review. You can learn about all the things he's doing at DellSandy.com, including Keep the Preakness in Baltimore, which is something near and dear to my heart as well. On behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don Mulder, who loves baseball, it's kind of how we got together back in 82. We all love baseball around here. I want him to be safe. That's it. Simple as that. You can find me. You can find us out at Baltimore Positive. Great conversations there with Don's former boss, Jim Smith, from last week, as well as Republican National Committee one-time chair, Michael Steele, and one-time Lieutenant Governor of Maryland, Michael Steele. All sorts of things. Cheryl Bose talking about education. Find it all out at Baltimore Positive, merging WNST.net, AM 1570, and Baltimore Positive. We are calm, local, and together at Baltimore Positive.